Welcome to Day Zero Update for August 4th, 2024. I'm your host, Chris Logie.
I'm Brandon Parkins.
And I'm Jenna Victoria.
And yeah, we've got a big week this week. A bunch of shitty news happened this week. We've had layoffs, both on the media and game development side, as well as just other crappy things happening throughout the industry. Mm-hmm. That'll be almost half of the week of the stories we have for the week.
Yeah.
But there is some positive news, not really in game development side or anything, just some games that'll be happening, finally coming out and all that, and things you can check out. But before we get to that depressing stuff, we'll talk about what we've been playing here, and I will kick it off. I've been playing more College Football 25, as I've been putting a good bit of time into it, especially in my Road to Glory mode with my creative player, who is doing very well. I don't have to get recognized for any awards or anything. I might have to up my minutes per quarter to get to that point. Though my running back has the highest rushing yards of any running back in the country, so that's at least a positive there. So much so I've been playing this that I wrote up a review for the first time in a while. To kind of get my thoughts out. And I think I had something like 2,400 words to it. So it's a doozy of a whole thing. So it'll be out here later this week. I definitely enjoy the game a lot, but there are definite elements of it that's hurt the entire premise of this game and things that you kind of expect out of it. Mainly things like the simulation is pretty weak. In the week to week advancing of the other teams and what they're doing. So much so that's where I'm at in Road to Glory, which is, I think it'll be the 2026 season. I just beat Ohio State with my Northwestern Wildcats, and they are like 2-9 now with a winless Big Ten record. And it's like they're rated 90. It's one of the best teams in the country. And it's like, I don't think there's enough random variance that this would be a realistic thing that could ever happen in at least the near future. They were tough to beat. And the other issue I have is that the coach's play calling in Road to Glory is very suspect. So much so that one of the times I was trying to play Ohio State, we were down 29-28. I had the ball, got to the goal line within a few yards of the end zone. And with about 30 seconds left, the coach takes me, the player, out of it to run whatever dumbass plays they tried to run and get no points, not even a field goal. And we end up losing the game, and I quit out because I'm not going to let that kind of bullshit kind of ruin a season with the way that stuff works. And it's like, that's pretty frustrating when I've had that happen a few times now. One time I was able to overcome it because we were tied, so it just went to overtime, and I won it from there. But they do take you out, the player out, from being able to play situations where they end up going for it on fourth down. And it's like, this is the kind of stuff that should not be happening in this kind of game. Any play that you're involved in should be a thing you can play. That kind of stuff is just super annoying. It doesn't happen very often. I've had that happen like three times in the, like, what would it be at this point? Like, 25 games I've played so far in career mode, but still annoying enough, especially the way that you can't necessarily see the log of what plays have happened outside of when you're in the screen where they've taken control away from you. I feel like that should be available at all times, and it just kind of shows that this game is very rough around the edges, very kind of unfinished in a number of ways. And like at the end, I do not recommend buying this game unless you are just in need of that fix of a college football game. But I suggest waiting for the updates. They've talked about fixing issues. I don't know which issues or what, but or when they're going to happen. But I recommend, like, just hang back, wait for these updates to come, and maybe grab it when it's on sale, because I assume when the season starts here in a few weeks, they will probably put it on some sort of sale.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, still recommend checking it out. So if you can rent it, or, you know, go in with a friend to pay for it and share it, that's a decent way of doing it. But yeah, it's not a great first effort for them. It kind of just makes these updates they put out here over the next few months very critical to setting a good base for which to build on. Because they've generally got a good base, at least gameplay wise, but all the framework around it, with the recruiting system, obviously simulation, all that kind of stuff, just is very rough around the edges, and feels like this game was just rushed out there. So, but yeah, that's that game. I've also started Kuni Tsugami Path of the Goddess. I am, I think, 3 stages in now, and I'm liking it a decent bit so far. A major issue is kind of early on, it tutorializes you a lot, but not where I would have appreciated more of it. There's a lot of points where I'm just like, okay, if I do this, like, you know, what's going to happen? And it's like, took me a while to figure out. In the base is when you're setting people up to do things, like, does that take them away from the main stage? Am I not supposed to do this that much? And it's like, no, that's a completely different, you know, existence for these people that you get in the stage versus the base version of that stage. And yeah, it's a lot of stuff where it's like, I'll save here and try it out and see how it goes. And yeah, like, it doesn't always explain things super well, especially I think the biggest knock I have on it is that there are these goals for each of the stages, and they do not show you them until you've beaten the stage once. So it kind of just makes it seem like the entire way you're supposed to play this game is just replay these stages over and over again, even if you don't need to complete those goals, because it's all the repair stuff you're doing in the base requires them to requires a set amount of time. That's in the form of how many stages you need to complete, and they're not unlocking stages very quickly. Because I believe you beat the stage, and then the boss stage, and then you unlock a new stage. I think that's how it's working out so far. And the boss stages are very weird. I had the first one I did, they introduced this offense-defense mechanic for the people you have in your party, essentially. And they did not seem to, it did not seem to work at all. Because if no matter where I would situate them, they wouldn't attack enemies, even if I had it set to offense. And then it's talking about, like, oh, if they get close to the girl, Yoshiro, who's kind of the priestess who's trying to purify all these stages. They'll get close to her, and I put them in defense mode, they still wouldn't do anything.
Yeah.
So I had to just do everything myself and kill the enemies that way.
When you put them on offense, they're actually all supposed to rush the boss. They don't actually rush any of the other enemies. And then when you put them on defense, they all run back to Yoshiro and, like, deal with the enemies coming that way, and they don't deal with the boss at all. So it's really just a matter of, like, knowing when the boss is attacking. When they're attacking, you want to play defense. When they're just walking around, that's when you use up the offense. But yeah, it's a little bit hard to understand, especially that early on. If you're on stage 3, I'd imagine you're on that boss with the torches, which is also rather tough. So I get
it. Yeah, I haven't done that one yet. But yeah, on the first one, they literally wouldn't move or do anything. They just stayed where they were. So I even tried to position them right around Yoshiro. In defense mode, and they didn't do anything, didn't attack any enemies, didn't attack the boss or anything.
it changes their jobs, because if they're just villagers and not woodcutters or, you know, archers.
I was pretty sure they were all woodcutters, because that was all I had at that point. Maybe I messed that up and it didn't make that super obvious, which it can definitely lead to that way. Where it should maybe have some say like, hey, you don't have a job on this person. So I've taken to just, as soon as the stage starts, like the regular stages, I just purify the path immediately to get Yoshiro going, and then I start putting jobs on everybody as I find them. Because in most of the stages, you have to find them first. Mm-hmm. I think when you're replaying, you don't necessarily have to do that. But yeah, it's like I'm just running around finding stuff where I can do things and doing that. So yeah, there's been some weirdness where it's not explaining things or making things as obvious as it should be. That's maybe been the thing kind of keep me from sticking to it as much, but I'm still not that far in, so I'll keep putting some time into it and see how it goes. But that's been my experience. The everything about it kind of works pretty well. The only real issue I've had is that the I kind of wish you had better control over Yoshiro's path, because I had it not be super obvious that it wasn't going to get to the end by the time night came, and so she was literally, you know, 5 feet in front of the gate, so I had to literally have all my people hanging right there to protect her from anything. Whereas the second time that it seemed like that was going to happen, I stopped her a bit further away and kind of positioned everybody in a better space for that. I'm also trying to figure out the upgrades for the different jobs. I am basically putting all the points I can into the woodcutter right now, kind of trying to max them out. I am putting some upgrades into the others, but not as much. Kind of just focused on maxing one out, because I figure then that's going to make those people more reliable and let the others kind of add on as they can. But that's kind of the strategy I've had so far.
Yeah, it's not a bad strategy early on, because you actually have the ability to take them off and allocate them elsewhere in case you don't like it that way. But yeah, it's a good way to go.
Yeah, so there's that. Kunitsugami, Path of the Goddess, pretty solid so far. And I also got this week Tomba Special Edition, which I got it on the PS5, PS4 version, because it seems like the Switch version might be the roughest one. I've seen some people say that their version just like crashes constantly. So I don't know what that issue is. On PS5, it seems to run well enough. It does have some loading, a lot of loading in it that seems longer than it should be for a PS1 game running on a PS5. Maybe that's just some tweaking stuff, because whatever emulator they're using for this, though, I've seen a lot of gnashing of teeth about that, since they're using PSX Armed or whatever it is, and it seems like a fine emulator for what they're using. But yeah, you have Rewind, which is good, because that's a game you can kind of have some real bad platforming or kind of jump on enemies or whatever and messing that up, so it's nice to be able to rewind, as well as you have save states, and that stuff is all pretty nice. And it has a bunch of extra bonus stuff, a lot of scans of marketing materials, the box art where they remove the PlayStation branding from it, and the Sony branding. So you still see like the little gold diamond on there from, that would be the Sony Computer Entertainment logo, but they just make it blank. So that's like the weird thing they do, is they kind of remove the platform stuff off of it, but you get the rest of the like case materials in there, the box art and the little inserts and all that. That's pretty neat, as well as some videos and some interviews with developers that worked on the game. So that's all stuff that's really cool to see, because the director on this game is a legendary Capcom developer. Who, if you were a fan of Capcom games in the late 80s and early 90s, he probably worked on them. He directed a bunch of games like Commando, the Bionic Commando games, Strider, was also producer on all the Mega Man games from like 2 to 6, I think. directed Sweet Home, which was a Famicom, horror game that essentially was the inspiration for Resident Evil.
Yep.
So he directed the original game and then was a producer on Resident Evil as a result, and worked on a bunch of the Disney games that Capcom did. So he has a long legacy of working on a bunch of cool Capcom games that people liked a lot on the NES and Super Nintendo and all that. But then, like, after Resident Evil, I think he left Capcom and kind of worked on the Tomba games with his home studio, Whoopi Camp, that were all good games, but just not huge sellers or anything. So from there, he just kind of did random stuff, usually coming back to work on, like, Ghouls and Ghosts. That's one of his series, when they did remakes or remasters on the PSP and the more recent Ghosts and Goblins games. He came back to direct that stuff.
Yeah.
But I think at this point he is done working on games. I don't think he's had anything in the last, since the last Ghosts and Goblins game. So that's been him pretty much. But yeah, the game itself is still a very fun game. It's a platforming adventure game where you are running around talking to people. Usually you get into automatic conversations with people, but you get to some scenarios where you're running into, like, a village of elves and you're talking to them, and somebody will be like, oh, I'm looking for this thing, can you go find it? And you get a big pop-up on the screen of, like, here's this quest that you've added, that you can go do. And you're like, I don't know what the fuck that's about, but I'll probably run into a thing later, then that'll be the solution for that. There are some hidden ones, so I do recommend, if you don't have extensive experience with this, bring a walkthrough, get one of those, and that'll show you if you're confused about where to go or what to, where to find these things. They do gate the quest by how many of the points you get, which you get from solving quests and defeating enemies and finding stuff. That all kind of adds up, so I think that's how they gate some general progress through the game. But yeah, it's a game that has a very fun jump to it. It's a very kind of, I think it would be the best jump animation in that era, at least, if not any era. Because your main way of taking out enemies is to jump on them and then throw them into usually maybe the other enemy or just off the screen or whatever. That is also how you open chests, is just jump on them and then you jump off to open them up if you've got the key for it. It does have some upgraded equipment, alternate weapons. You do have, like, a spiked ball to throw around. You know, something simple like that. But I have also have a wooden boomerang to throw around, so you can knock enemies unconscious that way and just kind of take them out more easily. But yeah, it gets pretty weird the further you go in, where I've found an area where that just has a bunch of mushrooms in it. And some of them make you happy and some of them make you angry and sad, and some you collect because they wear off the drugs. If you need that. So there's quests that require you to show up with, like, a sad face or an angry face, and so yeah, it's kind of one of those games. Yeah, it's a fun little game with a lot of, like, Metroid-y kind of elements, as well as just general adventure game elements of trying to find items you need to solve people's problems, and you get things in return that can help you do other things. So yeah, that's a cool game. It's $20 on PlayStation, Switch, and PC. I would probably recommend the PlayStation version. Maybe PC version as well. That one seems to be all right, but it's, I think, just PC gamers like to complain about the use of which emulator. It's like, well, if you don't like it, don't pay for it and use your own emulator. You can get your own with all that stuff, so that's a way to go. The other game I've been playing is a game called Police Simulator Patrol Officers. This is on PlayStation Plus. Apparently a very popular PS Plus game over the last couple of months. And yeah, I was playing some of this and was like, this is pretty all right. 'Cause the typical kind of simulator game that you see out there is kind of a really janky kind of experience of people putting together a game that don't really know how to make it feel good or anything. And it's kind of has that a little bit, but it still looks good and kind of controls well for the most part. You go to like a generic U.S. town called Brighton that I think is supposed to be like a Boston-ish kind of city. Just based on how things look in the areas I'm at. But initially you're a patrol officer to go look around at, you know, parking meters and see how people are parking and writing up tickets and all that and talking to people that are littering or jaywalking or whatever. You don't necessarily have to do everything that you see that's unlawful, but you know, you're encouraged to do that because you get bonus. They have two different like points you get. One is like conduct points for running up the wrong tickets, that kind of stuff, or doing various things, because you have a pretty good handbook that kind of explains what you do in certain situations. So it's like, oh, your intuition tells you they're looking sketchy, you know, looking real nervous or whatever. And it's like, well, that can then entitle you to do a search of them, do like a pat down search. And then you can do that. You know, look at their ID and notice like, oh, this is expired. You can decide to give them a warning or an actual ticket. You know, I do mostly warnings on that stuff unless they're being real snotty. And you can be that kind of shitty cop or a good cop or whatever. I don't know. But yeah, you're kind of just doing it. And as you go through each day, if you do enough things, you get experience to upgrade to the next level. And you go from just looking at parked cars and such to a real dumb thing is like trying to catch speeding cars, which means you're taking your cop into the road, holding a speed gun and pointing it at cars. Then you push the one trigger to like zoom in to, you know, scan their speed, and then the right trigger to take the picture. And it's like a real dumb looking thing because you don't see cops just standing on the side of the road, like pointing at people, usually in a vehicle or something. But that was the thing I was doing. But yeah, like the whole notion of like, oh, I didn't get a clear shot of their license plate. So, but yeah, I was also being a shitty cop. So I was getting people going like 27 into 25.
Yeah.
All that kind of fun stuff. And then from there, you start getting into the ability to have your own car, dealing with, you know, accidents and doing all that. And I had somebody who had to do a drug test on. I think they had amphetamines in their system. And so I was like, oh, they were driving under the influence, and like arresting them for that. And you call another cop, you know, cop truck to come in and bring them to the station. I guess I haven't gotten to the point where I can arrest somebody and put them in my car, but maybe I could. I don't know. I tried calling for a tow truck to take the car, and they're like, we're too busy. Maybe we'll get there later. And it's like, oh, okay. And it got to be the end of my shift, so I had to drive all the way back to a station and get on the computer to end the day and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, you kind of get to do some more interesting stuff, and it seems like it'll get to the point of like thieves fleeing the scene, foot chases, car chases, all that kind of stuff potentially. But I'm still in like the first week, so not really getting much to do there. But yeah, it's a pretty all right one of these. Seems to have multiplayer, and that you can have like a second person join you to help you out, be weird cops, I guess, as well. I forgot to mention that there's different outfit stuff, though it's mostly just here's the male version of the shirt you're wearing, and here's the female version. But you can have, you know, top hat on, or like a beaver mask, or one of those horse masks on your head. Just be the weird cop that has a beaver mask on his head. Be like a furry cop, I guess. I don't know. You can do that. I don't know. But Yeah, that's on PlayStation Plus. I think it's on everything at this point, but I can play it on PlayStation Plus and not spend money on it. So that satiated my curiosity about this game. So that's been pretty much it for me. So, Brandon, what have you been doing?
As for me, I finished No More Heroes 3 last night. That game was just incredibly unpredictable and random right up to the very end. Literally, the very end was basically you playing Smash. It's crazy. But yeah, it was a lot of fun while it lasted. I really enjoyed it. But yeah, so I'm done with that, and now I got to find something else to, you know, fill the void. But on top of that, I also, because it was on sale, I went ahead and got a copy of Guilty Gear Strive. And then I remembered that there was also a season pass, and I'm like, well, crap. But anyway, right now I'm playing the base game of Guilty Gear Strive, and, you know, it's Guilty Gear. It's one of the most visually pleasing fighting games you can ever play. And I haven't played Guilty Gear in a while, so I had to get used again to how this game plays. Because the thing about Guilty Gear is that every character basically plays wildly different, and they all have, you know, a different sort of difficulty curve when it comes to learning to play them. And the game tells you that all outright. Depending on what character you end up choosing, it'll give you like a rating of like how difficult it is to pick up and play this character. But yeah, still love it. I've already gone through a couple of arcade playings with it. And yeah, damn good game. Love it. Not sure if I'm going to sink money for the season pass yet, but we'll see when we cross that bridge when we get to it. But yeah, that's what I've been playing. So Dan Reb, what about you?
Yeah, I've been playing a bunch of different stuff since the last time. I quickly go back to it. I played and finished Konitsugami Path of the Goddess, which is why I knew some of the stuff that Chris was having trouble with. I think the last time I talked about it, I was on the third boss in the game, which required you to light up some torches. And like, upon some research, I saw that it was actually like one of the hardest in the game. So I don't blame myself on it. But then, you know, I was looking at Reddit, looking at different kinds of strategies. So people were saying like, oh, just fight it in the darkness. And yeah, that didn't matter. Like, the best thing for me was to just light up all the torches whenever possible and just go ahead and go on the offense from there. So that was the one boss that really showed me how to use the offense and defensive mechanisms there. And yeah, like a lot of the things that Chris complains about, particularly with the control of Yoshiro, is actually something that is sort of addressed later on in the game. So, you know, if you're ever up for it, yeah, you just keep going. And eventually you'll have so right now, like at the very beginning of the game, you're really focused on improving your lineup of villagers and, you know, their classes and whatnot. But eventually you also unlock more abilities as So is eventually going to be able to use a bow and arrow. He'll be able to change his combat style. He'll be able to use different kinds of commands wherever you are on the map, so you don't have to like go to specific parts, because eventually the maps will continue to increase in size. You'll be able to have more classes, and like it becomes archaic if you're just walking up to every single one of them. So yeah, like that's definitely something to look out for. And yeah, you actually do find yourself replaying some levels in the hopes of achieving some of those objectives, because as you progress through the game, there's an item called Mochi that becomes more and more scarce, and Mochi is actually what's used to upgrade all your classes. And like I said earlier, you know, you have the ability to go back on some of your decisions and use your Mochi elsewhere. So that's definitely a way that you can improve your loadouts and whatever have you be. That's pretty cool. And yeah, eventually, like, you'll reach this kind of this loop where, you know, not only are you replaying certain levels, but you're replaying them for the purpose of passing time, because passing time is the main way that you're going to be able to rebuild your bases. And the main way it does that is by playing through a level, whether it be a basic level or whether it be a boss level. So I actually found myself fighting the first two bosses over and over to, you know, get a better time, because the main objective with every boss fight is pretty much a time attack. So you want to be able to continuously beat your time. But the main thing, though, is if you've already accomplished an objective, you can't re-get it. So that's definitely something to keep in mind as you move forward. But yeah, I rolled credits at about 20 hours in. New Game Plus is a pretty interesting. I wanted to platinum the game, but that's not going to happen because the platinum requires you to complete all the objectives in every level in New Game Plus. And I'm like, yeah, this game is too hard for that. The very last boss is actually pretty tough, and I got really lucky with some of the tricks that happened during that match. And then when I tried the first level in New Game Plus, it was like playing a new game because you know, you play the first level in New Game Plus and they end up throwing enemies that at you that you see in like World 10, and I was like, okay, that's a lot. But yeah, as far as its challenge goes, it's very Capcom, and I really appreciate that out of that. It's it took me about 20 hours to roll credits, and yeah, it's definitely one of the best games I've played this year, and you know, automatically a surprise for me. So really happy that I got through that one. The next game I played through is Thank Goodness You're Here. This mm-hmm. game actually came out a few days ago, but I've had access to this game for weeks because I had an early copy for review. And yeah, I didn't even really need that time because this game takes 2 hours tops. For people unfamiliar with the game, it's an indie title. I think the developer is called Coal Supper or whatever. And the publisher is the same folks that published Untitled Goose Game. So, mm-hmm. you know, as far as like crazy things that can happen, this game is definitely there. The main thing that'll make people, you know, notice it is its art style. It's very, it's a hand-drawn game. And I compare it to the likes of like, you know, The Simpsons or, you know, even Ren and Stimpy, those kinds of games, just because the humor for me is, very, it's, kind of gross. But it's also British humor. And mm-hmm. like a lot of people find that funny. I particularly don't. So the humor fell flat for me there. You'll find a lot of humor in some of the stores and some of the names of the people and just their mannerisms. And yeah, like it was definitely funny in some areas because like some recurring jokes just lend themselves that way. But yeah, for the most part, I mainly just went through the whims with playing this game. As I mentioned, it's 2 hours. So basically what happens is you're this employee and like you learn about this town called Barnsworth, and you learn about all the different kinds of things they have there. And you're having a meeting with your boss and say, all right, you have to go meet with their mayor. And from there, it just throws everything at you. So you start off in your boss's room and it doesn't really teach you how to do anything. So the game is played from a top-down perspective, and aside from that, all you can do is jump and slap things. So you know, you just slap whatever. I slapped the water cooler, and it ended up falling down, and I just jumped on the water cooler and out the window, and then my character falls into a bus and ends up in Barnsworth, and then that's where we, you know, start our meeting. But the mayor isn't there, so they're like, all right, come back in a few hours. So you leave the town hall, and all of a sudden, like, you're in Barnsworth doing whatever. So you just walk around, slap things, you know, the more things you'll slap, all of a sudden you'll have like trophies that, you know, you wouldn't think you'd get. And yeah, like all of the puzzles that you'll do in this game are based on everyone's problems. And whenever you come across someone that says, thank goodness you're here, which is again, the title, then you know that that person has a problem there for you to solve. And mm-hmm. there, the game kind of plays like a, one of those point and click games, like back in the early Telltale days. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's kind of like that, except you have full agency of your character, walk around slapping things and mm-hmm. Things like that. So as you make your way through, you're actually opening up more of Barnsworth and, mm-hmm. you know, opening up yourself up to more and more of their problems. And eventually the game ends with all of them bursting into song. And yeah, mm-hmm. that's all I'll say from there. Again, like the humor didn't really hit with me, so that's why I didn't like this game as much as most people. But the fact that this game is only 2 hours long and is fairly simple to play definitely makes it, you know, sort of a highlight there. And yeah, the next game I've been playing is College Football 25. I actually platinumed it. And the main mode that I played playing this game is also Path to Glory. I made my guy a quarterback. From San Jose, but he couldn't start in San Jose, so I wanted to make sure that I could go to some place where I could start. And that also happened to be Northwestern. So I played, you know, my freshman season in Northwestern, and I played on the easiest mode possible. So it was easy in that regard. And like, it played pretty much like superstar mode in Madden. And, you know, so with that, you know, if you're using a quarterback, you're only going to be doing quarterback things. You know, you're going to snap the ball, you're going to throw it, you're going to hand it off, whatever it may be. And from there, you don't have much control. So I actually found most of my fun just running with my quarterback because I made him fast and things like that. And it's funny playing in the freshman mode, because even when you're like throwing bombs that you have no business completing, they get complete anyway. And you do that. So yeah, I ended up winning the Heisman on my first season there. And that's pretty much what made me pursue the platinum, because it was pretty easy to get on that difficulty mode. And then on my second year, I transferred over to USC, and I also went up to like the third difficulty mode. So yeah, I'm having a much harder time. But yeah, as far as like, you know, my coach making like dumb decisions, I haven't really come across that yet. And when there is something that I disagree with, I just, you know, press triangle to change the play. I don't know if you're always going to have that option. It's something that you have to earn with the coach's trust, which is, you know, what you do by making good plays. And I mean, good plays are harder to make the harder the game is. So I definitely understand some of the frustrations there. But as far as the gameplay, yeah, I'm liking it a lot. Especially, you know, compared to what I'm used to with Madden. For the most part, it feels the same. The main thing being, you know, there's a whole lot more option plays, and just reading and reacting to, you know, what the defense is going to do based on what you want to do with the option plays is pretty cool. I also played through some of the game's tutorial, you know, just to see like what was new. And yeah, like it's definitely very fluid. Most of my fun is best played with real people. The main thing though is, especially if you're playing Road to the College Football Playoff, which is kind of like their ranked mode, it's a little hard in that regard, especially if like your favorite school is a tier 3 school and you end up going against like tier 1s. Mm. And it's been fun, like, you know, both being creamed and then just ruining other people's dreams as well. Like, I was playing this kid on Xbox, and like he played a really good defense, but I also played a really good defense, and I ended up losing that game like 14-7, just because like I made like one big mistake. I threw a pick six, and like I threw three interceptions in that game, and but in the meantime, like, he threw six. I just couldn't find a way to score. But also, I was using San Jose State and he was using Ohio State, so yeah, there's a big difference in skill there. So I'm not totally surprised. So I'll say, all right, well, we'll just go ahead and say I win by covering the spread and things like that. But yeah, really enjoying the game. One underrated thing that I really find awesome is the fact that there's different commentary teams. And then I saw that they're doing the same thing with Madden, and that's something that I've complained about for a number of years. So it's funny that, you know, something that I've been complaining about is finally happening, like, after I not work for the company. But yeah, college football is fun. I definitely want to play it some more, like, with actual humans. But aside from that, like, yeah, it's about what I expected. If there's anything that I wanted more of, it's like more of the pageantry of college football. Like, I don't really have that. My opinion there might be a little skewed just because, like, you know, my college sucks at football, whereas, you know, I'm not a fan of any of the top 50 schools in the nation, and they might have like better entrances and whatnot. But, you know, playing with teams like Michigan, Ohio State, Alabama, it's definitely all there, but I feel like there's much to be desired, especially as far as, you know, what you're hearing. Like, I'm hearing like a couple songs that are recognizable as far as mainstream stuff, but I feel like a whole lot more can be done in presentation. And, you know, looking at the recent Madden preview, I feel like they also put some time into that. I'm not sure if the same teams work on both games, but they're marketing them in very much the same way. But yeah, like with Madden coming out in a couple of weeks, I'm interested in seeing how they further differentiate. But as far as like, you know, having a football game to play, much less a college football game to play, I'm glad we have this back. But it definitely could be better. Chris has his review. I haven't read yet, but yeah, once I do, we'll see if we agree there. But yeah, it's been solid so far. Next up is Marvel Rivals. This game went into beta a couple weeks ago, or maybe last week, I forget. I lost track of time. But yeah, everyone's calling this Marvel Overwatch, and they are absolutely right. This game is exactly like it. Pretty much all of the modes are the same. pretty much every character in Overwatch has a foil character in Marvel Rivals Beta. Like, the tutorial is pretty interesting. Like, when you're using the Punisher, he pretty much has the same feel as Soldier 76. You know, the Hulk kind of feels like D.Va, because when you kill the Hulk, all of a sudden the Hulk is gone, and all of a sudden he becomes, I forget his actual name, but, you know, when you kill D.Va in Overwatch, all of a sudden she drops out of her mech and you have to chase her around. I'm having the most fun using Scarlet Witch and Hela, both of which are pretty cool. With Scarlet Witch's main attack, like, you can't even really tell that you're causing damage, but, like, when you're going against her, you definitely feel it, and it's like, oh no, it's annoying, I'm losing, that kind of thing. And Hela has an awesome feel of attacks as well. They also released Thor sometimes this week to try out, and I'm also enjoying him. He's more of a close range fighter. He kind of feels like Reinhardt minus the big shield, because there's another character that has a similar one. I forget who it is, but yeah, it's been those two characters I really enjoy, and I've also been enjoying Magneto. Magneto has the ability to, you know, bring in all of the steel there and use it for his kind of stuff. He also has this big shield, so. Yeah, it's really fun playing it so far, but I definitely would have more fun playing it with people I actually know, and I have not been doing that. And what actually contributed to my fun in a bad way is the fact that I unlocked competitive, and competitive has been not fun at all. I stopped winning ever since I unlocked that mode, so that's been a bit of a downer. But yeah, as far as what it is now, Marvel Rivals is definitely fun, and the beta ends in a couple days, so I look forward to hopping back into that game after this, so that was pretty fun. I also started Tokyo Xanadu EX Plus. This game has been available on PlayStation for quite a few years now, but it was actually just re-released on the Switch last week. And the Switch version has an updated localization. I don't know how good or bad the one on PlayStation was, and I don't know if that'll be patched. But yeah, I started this today, and for those of you unfamiliar with the series, it's from Xanadu, but Tokyo Xanadu is a more modern take, and it's very similar to Persona, but because it's made by Falcom, of course, we're going to end up comparing it to Trails and East, and it's pretty much Trails with East's battle system. I don't remember if there's a jump button. If it has a jump button, it'll be pretty much the same as that. But yeah, it's been interesting so far. Like, especially playing all the Falcom games that I have, like, you know, Brandon can definitely relate with this. It's like whenever they introduce a new character, right, they start off showing them from the bottom up in a very, very slow panned way, and then you see their name there. Yeah, it's the exact same way there. And the funny thing is the teacher in the game is Towa from the Cold Steel games, and I was like, oh, that's totally her. But, you know, it's not her because it's a different universe. But I look forward to moving on with this, and I'm playing this one on Switch, so. Yeah, that's pretty much it. This is kind of like a lull time before things get really aggressive. I did play the Visions of Mana demo, but I'll go ahead and talk about that once we get to that in the story.
All right. So, yeah, let's get to some news here. And as it is a new month, there's some new subscription stuff, particularly for PlayStation Plus's monthly lineup.
Yep.
So we have three new games here. The big one here is for the PS5 and PS4, LEGO Star Wars The Skywalker Saga. The game that kind of retells the story of the main 9 movies. It kind of plays a bit differently than your usual LEGO game.
Yeah.
It has a bit better combat system to it. Not hugely different, but that are into like the Devil May Cry stuff and all that kind of talking, like, this is much improved kind of system there. So, yeah, I got some more intuitive kind of combat stuff going on versus just mashing a button to that. But yeah, there's a lot of content in this. I already own this, so won't be getting this, but yeah, it's got a lot of shit to unlock, like all the LEGO games do. And they have a lot of different systems to unlock a bunch of different stuff as you work your way through it. So yeah, there you go. That's one to check out.
All right.
Also for PS5 and PS4, Five Nights at Freddy's Security Breach. This is the big 3D game.
Yep.
We're exploring the big entertainment center, the Mega Pizzaplex. After dark where you have gotten stuck inside. Mm-hmm. I have to try to survive running these robots running around doing stuff. So
yep,
that's one of those games.
Mm-hmm.
So you can check that one out. And then for the PS4, Ender Lily's Quietest of the Nights.
Mm-hmm.
This is a Metroid-like, I believe.
Yeah.
They call it your dark fantasy 2D action RPG.
Yep.
Yeah, kind of set in this little Ender Lily series. I forget the whole series is called, but this is a series of games.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I've heard very good things about this, so
I look
forward to checking that one out. But yeah, that's your lineup. Some pretty solid stuff here.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah, it's pretty cool seeing this lineup. I remember when Star Wars Skywalker Walker Saga came out on Game Pass, and I downloaded it right away, and I did not boot it up. So yeah, now that it's on PlayStation, I can get trophies. I'll probably do that. I don't care for Five Nights at Freddy's, I never will. But Ender Lilies, I think this was the latest one in the series, and that's definitely something that I want to try out as well. So another Metroid.
Yeah. So yeah, there you go for that. Then we got some Nintendo Switch Online Plus expansion pack news for the Game Boy Advance app.
Mm-hmm.
They have added Pokemon Mystery Dungeon Red Rescue Team, or they will be adding it on August 9th. I think it says a lot that they're only putting one of these games on.
Mm-hmm.
I assume there's a blue version of this game as well, and that's too much content to give to people, is two versions of the same game. So you're just going to get the red version and like it, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. But these are, I think these are the ones that are the roguelites, if I'm remembering correctly. Yeah, the Mystery Dungeon series. Yeah, those are roguelites, like classic roguelites, in that you are moving around turn-based style on these grids as you run into other Pokemon, and you bump into them to fight them, that kind of stuff.
So
bit of a different vibe if you haven't played any of the Pokemon Mystery Dungeon games.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, something to check out.
Yeah, it definitely is an interesting choice to see only one of them here. They are mostly the same game, except for some very simple differences. This one is focused on the fire Pokemon, whereas the blue one is focused on the water types. So yeah, I never cared much for this series, but you know, maybe I'll try it out because I never
did. Yeah, so that this is the one that you are mysteriously turned into a Pokemon.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason. So you're trying to figure out, like, what the hell has happened? Why am I Pokemon? Yeah. You're recruiting others to help you out and doing all that stuff.
Mm.
So yeah, that's a neat game.
Yeah.
I'm trying to see if there's any differences mentioned here for what's the difference between them, but not seen it just yet. But yeah, there you go. They'll probably add blue at some point.
Mm.
Or whatever. But yeah, that's it for your subscription stuff. Mm-hmm. As far as other things happening, there is a demo for Visions of Mana ahead of its launch here in a few weeks. I think the 29th is the launch date for that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they let you, I believe, transfer it over, your progress, as you can play.
No, I don't.
Okay, they don't for this one?
No.
Okay, yeah, because it starts later in Chapter 1, it says. Okay, but you can unlock some stuff with that, so there you go.
Yeah, I played through it already. There's a preview up on Smash Pad for those of you that are that care enough about it. But yeah, Visions of Mana is a game that I've been interested in ever since I saw it. And, like, yeah, like, this game comes out at the end of the month, and this demo is the reason why I don't like JRPG demos. The main reason is, like, number one, the demos come out when the game is pretty much finished. And if you come across stuff that's in a demo that you don't like, there's no guarantee that they're going to take it out. And the main thing that I didn't like out of this demo was the fact that it didn't feel like the voices were synced to the mouth lipping. That's a huge pet peeve to me as far as, like, localized games go. And I'm not a fan of that at all. And then, you know, the other thing, as I just mentioned, as Chris was talking about it, progress does not carry over. And yeah, the reason for this is they put you, like, in the middle of the beginning, and I didn't really find that needed. That being said, like, this was a way to check out the battle system, and it's turning out quite well, or it is a pretty fun one. You can change your characters in and out whenever you want. Each of the characters feels different. The main character uses a great sword, so he holds it with two hands, so he's going to feel a little bit more sluggish. There's a knight character you can use who, you know, has a more traditional sword that you can use where it's pretty quick, feels like using Link. Another character in the game uses a staff, so it's pretty cool fighting from a distance there. And yeah, it's primarily those three. The demo gives you a whole lot of heals too, so you don't have to worry about being too reckless. And yeah, you also get a preview of the game's overworld, which is huge. There are all sorts of things in that map. There are things to collect. There are side quests. The side quests are pretty basic. You talk to a character, you go to another place, and you just fight enemies to come back to that character. I'm not a fan of coming back to that character, although I understand why you do that. But no, it just feels like a waste of time to me. And yeah, like the demo ends like when you go on this cruise or when you go on this ocean ship. And if you've played any JRPG, you know what happens when you go on the ship. You know, you're going to end up fighting a Kraken, and then the ship goes to hell. But the Kraken fight was pretty cool. It's not like, you know, what you see in a turn-based battle system where you want to just get rid of all the tentacles. You can just go ahead and fight this guy head on. Each of the three characters has a super attack that you can use after you've landed enough hits. But the main thing is that it's a shared gauge. So if you use it with one character, you wouldn't be able to use it with the other characters until you fill that gauge up again. But yeah, like from what I've played, it's pretty nice, except for the main thing about like the voices and stuff like that. But yeah, I'm still looking forward to it. And as Chris mentioned, like you don't even have to finish it. As long as you have that file of a save for the demo, you'll be able to get those three weapons in the.
So yeah, there you go. You can check out that demo. I believe it's on everything, so you can check it out here. And but yeah, we'll get to a couple of games here that are coming out in the near future.
Mm-hmm.
First up is Crypt Custodian. This is a Metroid-like coming out. I think this was announced during the one of the Summer Game Fest events. Yeah, I was trying to look at those earlier, figure out which one it was. I think it was the. I think the Gorilla Collective, yeah. That was on there saying it was out this summer, and we finally have a date, August 27th.
Mm-hmm.
So they're getting right there at the end of the month. This is on everything, PlayStation, Xbox, Switch, and PC.
Mm.
So yeah, this looks pretty neat.
Yeah.
It kind of has a good like Zelda and Metroid kind of vibe to it, so.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool.
Yeah, I don't remember seeing this one. This one was pretty cool. Is it played from top down, or...?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. Putting on my list.
Yeah. So yeah, there you go. For that one. Let me see here. We got Wildermyth. It's been on a PC for a couple of years now. It's finally come to consoles on October 22nd. This is PlayStation, Xbox, and Switch.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I believe they have done some work to make it work better with controllers, so that'll be fun to see. So this is a kind of party-based tactical, turn-based tactical RPG with a lot of procedurally generated story stuff to it. Mm. Kind of in the vein of like a D&D or other tabletop role-playing games.
Mm-hmm.
So you kind of get a bit of a unique experience out of it from the way other people are getting. So yeah, this has some cool stuff to it.
Mm.
And yeah, they've added a monster compendium so that you can get more detailed information on enemies that you've faced and the factions they serve, and as well as local cooperative multiplayer. So you can have other people playing with you and taking control of characters, I assume, in sort of the similar fashion as Baldur's Gate 3 had with some of their multiplayer stuff. So yeah, that's a one to keep an eye on there.
Mm.
I feel like you're story-focused RPGs.
Mm. Yeah.
So yeah, there you go. That'll be out in October. Mm. And then the last one here, Microsoft has delayed Avowed.
Mm.
It is coming out now February 18th, 2025. I believe they just had a fall release, and people were wondering like if they're ever going to announce it, and yeah, it seems to be pushed into an early 2025 release now.
Yeah.
So yeah, hopefully that means the game will come out in a good state. So yeah.
Yeah, I think they actually came out and said that it's actually moving quite well, and they delayed it just to get it out of the way for other games in the schedule, which you rarely see from a company. So I think it's a good thing that they did that. And I don't know what's coming out next February, so it could be a good decision. I'm not sure. But Avowed was definitely fun when I saw it at a...
Yeah. So yeah, that'll be out. That'll be about 6 months from now. So there you go. And now let's get to the negative branch of the stories here. First up here, Paradox Interactive has shelved another game.
Again.
Yeah, this time it is Prison Architect 2 that they have delayed to, or just delayed indefinitely, as they are the ones that bought the Prison Architect franchise from the devs of the original game. And this has been in early access for a while, so I guess it's been in rough enough of a state that they decided to not try and push it to release. Yeah, what do they say here? August 2nd, Paradox and developer Koku announced that Prison Architect 2 was no longer arriving September 3rd. Yeah, they explained they need more time to improve both the game's performance and its content. They also added that they can't commit to a new release date or window, as they're reassessing the scope of work needed to be done before the game is release ready. So yeah, that might end up getting it scrapped like the Sims-like game that they were getting worked on, though that at least wasn't out in early access yet. So this one would be a bit rougher on that because people have already paid for it. But they are allowing people to refund the game that have pre-ordered it or, you know, gotten the early access version on Steam.
Yeah,
if they need to. And yeah, they're pledging to include all the previously promised pre-ordered digital items in the base game as a result. So yeah, they are stressing, I guess, that it's not officially canceled, just delayed for the time being. So hopefully that means they do get it into a good state to release, and people aren't going to be asked out here. So yeah, we'll see how that goes. But yeah. So there you go on that. We do have a follow up here on the Humble Games layoffs, that how that is affecting developers, and basically that it's not going well at all. Yeah, the Squid Shock Studios, that makers of Bo: Path of the Teal Lotus, that just launched July 17th, so literally a couple of weeks before the shutdown. Yeah, said that let's see here. Yeah, they announced that they had no contact with the studio now as a result. Where's this at? Okay, there it is. The restructuring was a critical blow to our post launch support. They said it was they have little recourse for updating or hot fixing its new title on the Switch, PS5, or Xbox Series X, as they just don't have access to the back end permission stuff for console platforms to push updates out. Just Steam. So they have no way to do that. In some of these cases, Humble Games had deals with port studios that were going to manage that stuff. And so with the people at Humble Games being no longer there, and instead having some sort of consultant company that's now the middle, the go-between here, these devs no longer have the information they need to get any of that going. So they're basically like, well, shit, our console people are now just stuck with whatever bugs are in there, at least for the time being. The developers of Coral Island also talked Stairway Games, saying that that they were offering Nintendo Switch players a chance to switch over to the Steam version as a result, without paying for the game again. They said in its post that they're worried about the ability to port its game to Nintendo Switch, which was a Kickstarter thing there. So, but without assistance from Humble Games, however, Humble Games representative Michael Brown told Polygon here that nothing has changed. No developers have had to change their porting plans. Every project is moving ahead, which sure seems to confuse the developers actively working on games.
Yeah.
He said some studios are still in the process of getting synced up with their new points of contact. Mm. Other concerns are currently being addressed and any issues resolved as quickly as time allows. For developers, the process isn't moving fast enough. As Starway said, for example, we have an upcoming hotfix for the 1.1 update nearing release for Steam. We have no idea how to get this update out to other platforms, players, as we don't have back-end permission on console platforms to push those updates out. We only have access to the Steam back-end. And so it's like that kind of stuff. You're like, yeah, this seemed like a bad idea to do this because Ziff Davis wanted to save some money, I guess. Yeah, and yeah, they've got other developers kind of standing in solidarity with the teams that are affected. Temtem developer Prima posted about the difficulty Squid Shock is facing and sort of suggesting people to support the game and sort of explaining that they're kind of being screwed around here with by the people, you know, making these layoff decisions. So yeah. The co-founder of Meowza Games, makers of Mineko's Night Market, said the game's porting plans are in limbo because they don't have the console backend permission. They also pushed out a build shortly before the layoffs that are that reintroduced a few old bugs. Humble acted as the go-between and facilitated the contracts with the porters, so now we have no contact with the porting team or the publisher to address this for the time being. We're waiting to hear from a representative, but so far haven't heard anything from them until we understand what sort of plan slash relationship we expect to have with them moving forward. We can't say with any certainty what the state of ports will be in. And so, yeah. Another person close to Humble Games, who wish to remain anonymous for fear of retaliation due to an NDA, that Squid Shock Studios felt stranded and abandoned by Humble's management.
Yeah.
After reaching out for clarification by an internal Slack and only receiving goodbyes from laid off staff in response. Overnight, they said communication about console ports vanished. And so, yeah, that's further verifying all the stuff that's happening. So, yeah, that's not great. Apparently, that this consultancy group is called the Powell Group. Potentially mainly to keep things in good enough shape so they can potentially sell Humble Games as an operation, which sure about going that a way that makes it seem like that's not gonna they're not gonna get much back. So yeah.
All right.
Yeah, it's definitely a rough situation. It's definitely a rough situation. Obviously I wasn't here last week when this was announced, but yeah, you know, prayers out to everybody affected by this, including the developers. You know, in my experience, I've always worked for a developer that was always a publisher, so I don't really have a lot of color to add as far as like what's actually lost here. But you know, if I'm thinking about this correctly, it seems like Humble Games as the publisher handled a lot of facilitation with other parties, including the developer here, and it seems like a lot of that was lost. And you know, I can definitely understand I guess it's Powell and, you know, what Humble is saying about things being continued, because, you know, I would still expect, like, you know, everything they're saying to be true here. But the main thing that's lost is the fact that when you're working with different people and all of a sudden they're replaced by different people, it's not going to be smooth sailing, because, you know, one, the entire staff was laid off, right? So as far as like handoff, there was no handoff. So you can have someone in Powell like as talented or as knowledgeable as can be, but if they don't know what they're actually replacing and they don't know the progress of whatever is happening with each of these developers, like, you know, it's going to be lost from there, and it's going to take a long time for them to be fully caught up. And by the time they're caught up, like, I don't know how many things in the pipeline are going to be messed up as far as where the timeline is. So that's really unfortunate. That also costs a lot of money. The sad part of this is this company might be outsourced, and you know, you you lose more as far as like language barrier and things like that. And yeah, like I absolutely feel for these devs who are just, you know, left here to rot, especially if, you know, you have like all these Kickstarter things that you promised players. And, you know, I would hope that the players who helped Kickstart would understand the situation where I hate saying that we're in unprecedented waters and things like that, but that's just what it is. And yeah, hopefully we're able to get out of this stuff with less of a mess, but it's pretty clear that it's a big mess to clean up. Sucks.
Yeah. So yeah, that's a shitty situation that's still developing. So hopefully that improves at some point, but who knows? I think people in the comments are suggesting that the Humble Bundle or the Humble Games PR person is a Ziff Davis PR person masquerading like they know exactly what's going on here. And it's like, yeah, that sounds like something that the parent company would do to try to act like there's nothing going on. Bad things. Nothing to see here. But yeah, let's keep the angry train going.
Yep.
This time about Apple Arcade. As a number of devs have called Apple out for their out-of-touch control of this service, citing Vision Pro and payment issues as well. Various things. And some of the complaints from sources build on what was previously discussed in February. Developers are now waiting up to 6 months to get paid. Go weeks without communication from Apple and eventual talks can be disappointing. One source alleged meetings often have half of Apple's team missing. Those that are there have no idea what's going on and can't answer our questions. Either they don't have knowledge or can't speak because of confidentiality reasons. Other concerns raised in the report were brand new. Many surrounded the Apple Vision Pro. Developer claimed Apple's engineering support didn't know how the headset worked, making game development for it even more difficult. Another described the process as going back in time 10 years. Despite the advertised power and cost, it's not a machine built for games. Getting any complex games working on the platform is difficult. And yeah, especially with Apple Arcade. Many issues. Let's see. One developer claims it has a discoverability problem that greatly harms older games when a new one with a similar title releases. According to them, the older titles allegedly phase out of search results completely as the new game takes chart and promo space. A developer described their game as being in a morgue for the last 2 years, despite their title being an arcade exclusive. They claim it doesn't matter what we put in the game, Apple won't feature us. It's like we don't exist. And yeah, like last time, the arcade studios feel that Apple still misunderstands the game industry or how to establish a foothold in it. While the developer has faith in the arcade, they feel Apple needs a clear goal for where it should go and what it is for. Another believes Apple has put studios in an abusive relationship where we do everything we can to please them for little in return in the hope that they grace us with another project and a chance for them to screw us over again. So yeah, there's a lot of stuff here. Makes a lot of sense because Apple has had a passing interest in games over the last like 20 years. They occasionally go into like, oh, we care about games now that you can make us tons of money on our mobile platforms. Then like, hey, we can make this Apple Arcade service that allows you to get arcade games that have none of that microtransaction bullshit in there.
Yeah.
Like, well, what's the next step of that then? It's like, I don't know. We just keep putting more games on here, I guess. And it's like, how do you fix discoverability? Make all those games, as they get updates and all that, how do you make them more approachable to find and access? And like the notion that games with similar names, they just like essentially soft ban the old game from ever getting any sort of push is hilarious. It just reeks of they don't really care, so they put as few people in charge of the stuff as possible.
Yeah.
And then a lot of those people are busy with other things, so those that kind of come in relief of them are just like, well, what the hell's going on here? What have these other people been doing? And like, oh, they've been doing nothing. Oh, great. So yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have an Apple Vision, so as far as like the process of like things like featuring on the Vision Store web, whatever it may be, like I don't really have many eyes for that. But like in my last job, I did a lot of submissions to Apple in order to get some of our stuff featured because it's really important. search engine and optimization and a lot of various things as far as user acquisition have gotten a whole lot more expensive over the years, especially considering like where we are with like the internet and things like privacy. Like one of the reasons why mobile gaming is really hard to get into, especially now, is because of things like IDFA issues and privacy, where a lot of these changes that Apple and Google made are actually good for the consumer. Like, it's good that they're adding more privacy things. But because of all that, a lot of mobile companies don't have the ease of use as far as their ads anymore. And, you know, while it is cool to see it be less annoyed to be bothered by such ads, it was like the main way a lot of companies were making money, and they no longer have that anymore. So I wonder, and the reason why I bring that up is I wonder, like, how many people who worked on that side of Apple are also working on the visibility and curation of the Apple Vision. Not to mention, like, you know, it's quite clear that, you know, the Apple Vision was a flash in the pan when it first came out. I don't really see much people talking about it now, both as a piece of tech and as a thing to advance gaming, although it's something that I think is interesting and something I really, really believe in. But then, like, you know, this piece about, you know, these meetings about half the staff is actually there, it also makes you wonder if the layoffs that Apple had, you know, a few months ago also come into this. Because, you know, the more people you get rid of who specialize in various things and you think you can go ahead and throw their job at other people, it's not going to be easy, as I mentioned, with what happened with games. So it's just rough. Like, I don't know who to blame here, but obviously it's frustrating, especially as a developer. And when we had issues with Apple, what we did was we actually got our CFO to yell at people. And yeah, that way you're like hitting people in the wallet. And yeah, so it sucks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And to be clear, these aren't all with Apple Vision Pro. These are just people making games for Apple Arcade and how they're getting paid. And they're trying to just generally engage with the Apple development ecosystem, which seems to be as much of a mess as you'd expect from looking at the shop, the app store and all that. So yeah, it's looking like with everything else, there's too many games and too few people to help manage all that stuff. But the execs don't care because they want to make the most money off the least amount of spend possible.
Yep.
So yeah. There you go. And now let's get to the biggest bullshit of the week.
Yeah.
First up here, Bungie has been laying off a ton of people. I believe the numbers here was that they have gone from being about 1,300 to 850 about with this layoff. That includes 220 people getting laid off completely, about 155 more are being transferred to teams at Sony. And then I believe another group, because they had sort of incubation teams within their studio that were kind of working on like pre-production stuff for some projects. They were trying to see if they were going to, you know, turn into full games. And it seems like one of them didn't. A game that I think was titled Payback. At least in pre-production, is like a potential Destiny spinoff that was in a third-person shooter kind of vein of thing. It seemed like it could have been neat, but probably did not turn out very well. But the other studio, or the team that was working on something, has been spun off into a bespoke studio under PlayStation proper that will be working on something that's described as a brand new science fantasy universe. Which doesn't mean anything. Just means it's not set in within the Destiny universe or the Marathon universe, I guess. So yeah, this all wrote out by Pete Parsons, I believe, their main director of the studio, the CEO, who immediately after putting out this blog post with all this information, privated his Twitter account so people couldn't yell at him in his comments and his replies when he tweeted about it. So that just shows you everything you need to know about him as a person. But yeah, this very much seems like Bungie was taking the investment money they were getting from Sony, kind of working on a number of other games, mostly Destiny 2 and Marathon, but also this incubation stuff and the DLC for Destiny from Lightfall to the most recent one, The Final Shape, have not done well enough. Mm-hmm. Nor is the game bringing enough money to support all these extra teams.
Yeah.
But Bungie has decided to have to cut a bunch of people because, surprise, surprise, continue to make DLC that is not opening up the experience to more players. It's all based on, you know, the evolution of the story over the last, you know, several expansions has done worse than Lightfall, which the way this stuff typically goes, people didn't like the Lightfall expansion, which means that when The Final Shape comes out, even though it's the word of mouth has been pretty, you know, excited for most people because it's dealing with long-term story stuff and all that, to making some good changes, but people tend to, when they have a bad experience with the franchise, to skip the next entry. And so that's kind of where they have led here with basically past decisions finally coming to a reckoning for them.
Mm-hmm.
For the management of Bungie kind of putting this all on the people, laying off, you know, 220 people to make up for their mistakes. And as Sony seems to be wanting to get more control of this studio because they have, you know, obviously a lot of talent and skill there, make great games, but they're being run by knuckleheads who seem to, from the way it's being talked about, like very much have sold Sony on a bill of goods that they probably knew they could not you know, follow through with.
Yeah.
Especially like being an incubation studio here for a bunch of new projects that did not work out. Because Marathon's still quite a ways away, probably a next year game at this rate.
Yeah. And,
having one of those at least go well enough that Sony sought to spin them out as their own studio that they'll invest in, and bring, you know, another 150 people into the fold at Sony and to work at other studios, presumably, maybe on that other studio as well. But yeah, kind of trying to come in and help this company run better, and not be wasting a lot of money on things that aren't going to make a ton of return on investment, as well as just be a good use of these people's time. Yeah, it just kind of basically seems like management just really screwed everybody over.
Yeah.
And Sony has to come in here to be the good guy in a bad situation.
Maybe yeah.
Still, they can barely even salvage half of the people that are being, they're essentially losing their job at Bungie, but half of them will be having work to do elsewhere. So hopefully that goes well for them, and best of luck to the other 220 people. That seems to include a number of big names, including like Luke Smith, who was a big name in the way that Destiny turned around back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
He was one of the chief people kind of helping to get Destiny back on track the way that people wanted it to be. Kind of the guy that they brought out to be like, yo, shit's serious. This is how serious it is. We're bringing Luke Smith out here to talk to you about it. And directing, you know, the various expansions and whatnot. So he's gone, and yeah, a handful of other people that I've seen, people that pay attention to the way Bungie development has been going, have been like, holy shit, they let these people go. So yeah, awful situation all around. Bungie trying to run independently seems to bit themselves in the ass here good like 2 years later, like it's how long they've been owned by PlayStation, but them running independently has not been a good decision by Bungie, especially for the near $4 billion that was spent to acquire them and retain talent and all that, that is largely probably largely gone to the management, which people found out that Pete Parsons has been buying lots of expensive cars lately. perusing one of the sites about tracking that kind of stuff. As in, he signed up for an account and, you know, blogs about his new cars that he's gotten. Very expensive cars. And I hear his comments on one of them, like, saying he drives underserved kids in it. And it's like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah.
So, yeah. It's a fucked up situation all around. Hopefully they can be better in the future, but right now it's a real rough place.
Yeah, it's a terrible situation all around. It actually makes you wonder, like, where Bungie would be if they just stayed with Activision. Because I feel like, I don't know if it would be that much better, but it wouldn't be, like, the mess that we see today. Like, I remember it being sort of, like, a positive message once they went independent, but it was pretty clear that was something that was just taken for granted. And then, you know, when Sony made the purchase, yeah, a lot of us had questions, and then, you know, we ended up seeing what we saw. You know, this was not their first batch of layoffs, and yeah, a lot of the most talented people in the industry are now looking for jobs. And the good thing is that they're some of the most talented people. But, you know, the bad thing is, like, you know, when you're as talented as you are, you would think that you'd be in a more safe situation, especially if you're the developer of Halo and Destiny and, you know, all these franchises that are, like, home names. Like, you would think that you're safe, but you're not. And, you know, sure, like, you can go back to the fact that the DLC didn't really reach expectations, primarily because it's really geared towards people who have already been playing the game and not anybody new. But yeah, it's just rough all around. And, you know, just seeing everything that has been said about Pete Parsons is just heartbreaking, especially with all the time or with all the car stuff. I saw that, what was it called? Like, he, like, wanted to show someone his car collection 2 days before he was laid off. He was also, his Twitter bio says be brave, but once the layoffs happened, he had it on private for a while. He eventually took it off private, but still, like, there is nothing brave about what he's doing. Absolutely sucks. Like, if you asked me who Pete Parsons was a month ago, I would not know who he is. And the fact that I know who he is now just shows that, you know, if you're someone that makes these decisions, you probably don't want to be known. And, yeah, like, it's tough for me to even think of a CEO that I actually do like, and that's just where the industry is. And that's, you know, I hate to end another an analytical story with that sucks, but it sucks, and I'm pretty sure I'm going to say that about our next story too. So,
yeah,
it seems like the aftermath of this Bungie news is kind of that they're stopping work on expansions for the time being. Probably to figure out what the next step is, because it seems like they might have spent a little too much time working on Destiny 2 content and not, like, say, getting ready for a Destiny 3 that could put them on new tech to make it easier so they don't, you know, have to deactivate entire campaigns that people have paid for being playable in the game.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I mean, like, not to mention Sony has a lot on their hands too with Marathon. Like, one, not a lot of people know about that series to begin with, and then two, it's an extraction shooter. Not a lot of those do well. And, you know, Sony already has Helldivers, and, you know, that game is also sort of, like, I'm not saying it's no one plays it anymore, but it's not the same story it was at launch. And, you know, Sony got themselves into the situation by doubling down on live service games, and, you know, they did have the best of the best in Bungie, and, you know, they took Bungie's advice with the whole Last of Us multiplayer mode and eventually canceled the game. So I wonder where they are with that now. Yeah, it's a weird situation. And if anybody can write this ship, it's Sony. It's just that these are waters that we don't even know if they can. I mean, as far as I think of it, Helldivers was complete luck. So,
as far as I have read, it seems like Bungie is kind of back at where they were pre-purchase. Like, they took that money that Sony had to invest in them and kind of just banded, like, from 800 some to 1300, and that's a lot. That's a huge amount of people to invest into, especially sort of on the end of the pandemic as far as, you know, companies were concerned. But yeah, it seems like a lot of money spent on hiring people that with no guarantee that that was going to be a long-term thing if they ultimately kind of came out of that without much of any sort of new projects of worth, really. Outside of Marathon, but I think they've been working on that reacquisition. That's not really a new project, and there's also word that that might have changed genres, so who knows? Might not be an extraction shooter anymore. Might be more just general multiplayer focused, but who knows?
Yeah. We'll
see. But yeah, there's your Bungie news.
Mm-hmm.
And next up, Game Informer has been abruptly shut down by GameStop. Yep. Was the longest running gaming magazine still going in the U.S. As of shut down, they were at 33 years. Game Informer will have one more issue that is going out to people that subscribed.
Yeah.
And then now they sent out emails basically like, send us an email to this address about getting a prorated refund. And it's like, why the fuck do we have to send you an email to do this when you should be doing that automatically?
Exactly.
Which is probably because they want to keep that money and hope people forget about it. Same reason they would want you to have traded money and then not spend it right away. It just sits in their banks and makes the money in their savings accounts. So yeah. A lot of the people that worked at Game Informer currently seem to find out about this not through direct communication from GameStop.
Nope.
But through from other people telling them or being on Twitter or whatever when it started happening, and then found if you go to GameInformer.com right now, it is just a JPEG.
Yep, it's a lander page, and it sucks. Like the whole archive of the decades of journalism that's been on that website is just gone. The only way you can access it is through the Wayback Machine, and you should never have to do that.
Yeah, at least their video stuff is still on YouTube, so I recommend checking that stuff out.
Yeah,
but yeah, these people.
Yeah, just to also put just a little bit of an extra strawberry on top of the bullshit, the message that they sent out to subscribers that morning is freaking written by AI.
Yeah.
And like it's infuriating. It's gross and I'm going to be completely frank. I found a game shop here in Macon that is superior to GameStop in just about every way. They have a wider range of products, including old vintage stuff, including the stuff that, GameStop doesn't accept. And they are competitive with GameStop by if you're trying to get money or score credit, they'll give you 10% more than GameStop will. So I have completely severed myself from GameStop.
Yeah, I can definitely tell this message was not written by anybody from Game Informer because they say here, like, from the early days of pixelated adventures to today's immersive virtual realms. Like, who the fuck a Game Informer would write that?
Yeah.
As well as ending it here with, thank you for being part of our epic quest. Mm-hmm. May your own gaming adventures never end.
Yeah.
I was like, this is at least from a GameStop PR person because that's.
Yeah,
kind of shitty gamer lingo you would force into this kind of.
Yeah, shit. But it was more than likely written by AI.
Yeah,
more than likely. Like, it definitely wasn't confirmed, and nobody's going to confirm that. But we do know that nobody at Game Informers said that much. So,
yeah,
it's garbage.
Yeah,
and like you said, nobody at Game Informer knew this was happening. There was no, warning ahead of time or announcement or anything. It's just we all woke up that morning and Game Informer was gone.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it sucks. It's disgusting. And, just screw GameStop. I hope that whole corporation burns to the ground and its old employees get to piss on the ashes.
Yeah.
Cause it's just, and after the internet teamed up to try and save their asses, and this is what they repay us with.
Yeah,
so just
yeah, and they had people kind of in all sorts of different dates of work. One was at Evo and kind of doing a bunch of work on a feature for that. Mm-hmm. Presumably to either go on the magazine or on the website. And yeah. It was like, well, that was for nothing. Yeah, another, let's see. Kyle Hilliard, who's been there for a long time, though he was not for a few years because he got laid off the last round.
Mm-hmm.
That you're a frustrating turn of events, especially considering we were about 70% done with the next issue. Just mm-hmm. want to have a great cover. That's not the Dragon Age one he's talking about. It's the one after that.
Yeah.
And he posted about how the last time he got laid off, he dug a hole, I think, for like a pit kind of thing, mm-hmm. fire pit thing. And this time he was entering the like 256 numerical code for transferring saves into Golden Sun.
Mm-hmm.
Because that was how he was going to use his time off for the time being.
Yeah.
But also said here, I'm furious about this is Ben Hansen, who used to be the video producer there, now runs Minmax, mm-hmm. which was, you know, largely run by former Game Informer people doing essentially their own like YouTube, Twitch streaming channel that is funded by Patreon supporters. Mm-hmm. He said, I'm furious about the end of Game Informer. It was an incredible 33-year run, and then GameStop pumps out this phony slash empty feral message. Mm-hmm. And then money was written by AI. Fuck you, GameStop, and a huge fuck you to Ryan Cohen.
Mm.
So, yeah. Yeah, it's been a media company kind of doing a lot of great work over the years. They started as a newsletter at GameStop before, you know, evolving into an actual magazine in the early 90s with the same people that were, you know, there in the early days until fairly recently in the last few years before Andy McNamara and Andrew Reiner kind of found themselves wanting to go elsewhere and do other work. And they became like a huge reserve of just game industry history stuff as they had a huge area filled with old games and all sorts of press materials and all that kind of stuff that so much of the Video Game History Foundation you know, made trips to scan a bunch of materials and all that. And it's sort of one of the things they use for their own video series where they would just go in and pick a random game off the shelf and play it for their video series replay or for their super replay, which is like their full playthrough of games. All that kind of fun stuff. And yeah, it's sad that that is all effectively shutting down.
Yeah.
Yeah, just losing a big part of gaming history, especially as the number of big media outlets is, you know, dropped precipitously over the last 5 years, especially for magazines. As Game Informer was essentially the last big multi-platform gaming magazine of record in the U.S.
Yeah,
there are a few others that are focused on like retro game stuff, but they're obviously not covering like current happenings in the industry. Like the last few are like Edge in the UK and a couple over in the UK doing that kind of stuff. So yeah, not much left on the magazine front, but they also did a lot of work on the website and video stuff as well. So yeah, just a huge shame. And like, yeah, whenever I was putting together our outlines of news sources, I would literally just go to Game Informer first to kind of get the gist of like the big stuff before going to a few other sites and see what else they had to add in. So yeah, this will be a big blow on that front as well.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, this one definitely hurts, and obviously it's going to be more personal to us because we are also a publication. You know, I didn't grow up with a Game Informer. The main reason why I subscribe to Game Informer is because I've been a GameStop PowerUp Rewards subscriber for all these years, and the reason why I do that is specifically for Game Informer. And like, you know, I've become a fan of and met so many members of their staff. They're all smart, really talented people. So I look forward to, you know, whatever it is they do next and whatever happens when, you know, they decide to rise from the ashes. I don't know like what kind of funding they'd get, but like, you know, if somebody were to start a Patreon to form a new magazine and these guys end up getting, you know, better treatment that they would ever get at GameStop, then, you know, I'm all for it. But, you know, this, with all the layoffs happening over like the last year and a half, we've already seen more than 20,000 affecting both the industry and media. And it's just tough to see, because while, you know, I can go ahead and be hopeful for the future, especially from people who are talented enough to go ahead and rise through the ashes, just that there's also the very real possibility that they'll just leave, because there is nothing for them here. And like, that sucks. And they can definitely take their talents elsewhere, assuming that they can find something. And at the same time, it's like, will they find something? I don't know. I've been laid off for the last 6 months, and I've had 20 interviews, and I don't have a single offer. And so, yeah, it's been frustrating in that regard as well. But yeah, like, I'm someone who grew up with Nintendo Power and EGM. So, you know, magazines were definitely really important in my life. It's really what made me a gamer. It's really what made me want to pursue sort of gaming journalism to the way we see it today. You know, both me and Chris came from GameSpot. Like, we met that way. We met, like, the founders of SmashPad. It was Gaming Nation back then. And, yeah, like, we all had, like, dreams of, like, doing what these guys do now. And, you know, I graduated with a degree in journalism and magazine editing. And knowing that our last magazine is gone, like, it's just, like, heartbreaking, because the thing that I've wanted to be, like, most of my life, like, seems that it no longer exists. We have to find a different way to pivot. And it's just tough. So, like, if you see something that you support, like, go ahead and support it. I think a few weeks ago we actually talked about a really good deal on Game Informer magazine. It's like, okay, cool. That money's wasted now, even though it was a huge discount. But yeah, we might as well just go ahead and get that disc or refund from GameStop now. But yeah, it's it's just rough. I hope all these people land on their feet. And the other thing that really pissed me off was when I saw that the website was taken down and replaced by that splash page. You know, there are decades of really good content on there. A lot of stuff that couldn't make it to the magazine was put on the Game Informer website. And, you know, not everything there was locked behind a fee. Like, it was all there for people to see. And it's cool to see places like MinMax work on trying to archive all that stuff from the Wayback Machine. Like, you know, when my game was canceled, they ended up taking down all of the social media that I did. And unfortunately, none of that stuff is available on the Wayback Machine. So I was lucky enough to put what I wanted on my portfolio, but a lot of it is gone. So I definitely understand how it feels there. But yeah, like, it's too frequent that we're seeing these stories of people losing their jobs when they were out actually working. You know, being out in Evo and finding out that everything you did was for nothing. It's like, okay, cool. I guess it was a free trip, but otherwise, it's like, you know, they just left them out in the dust. And the thing with layoffs is that you're supposed to know they happen. You know, like, these people should have been told a month ago. And the fact that didn't happen is just totally heartbreaking. It's totally dumb by GameStop. It's borderline illegal. So I'm expecting a lawsuit, you know, here and now sometime soon. And I'm pretty sure, like, it's going to be tough for Ryan to handle, because he's been trying to sell that meme stock. And that doesn't really happen or exist in this time and place anymore. And that's tough. What was the last thing? It'll come back to me. But yeah, it's just tough seeing this all around. Yeah, hopefully we see something good about it. In the UK, magazines are still alive and well. But in the United States, like, magazine stands don't even exist in New York for the most part. It's mostly newspapers, and even those are hard to, pretty bad all around.
Yeah. So yeah, I think that is gonna end it for us here on a bummer note, but
all right,
there wasn't much in the way of usually positive news to counter this, so we're kind of just stuck in that as an ending for this week. So, yeah, thank you to Brandon Danner for joining this week.
Always.
We'll be back next week with a new slate of news and more positive things to talk about, hopefully. Maybe we'll get another week at some point without layoffs happening, but that's rare as we go. Especially we get into the holiday season where people are finishing up games and such. So thank you all for tuning in. If you enjoy the show, for let friends and family know about the podcast, and select strangers that are also tired of fucking GameStop's bullshit. Thank you all for tuning in. Hope you have a good week ahead. We'll see you all next time. Have a good one.